Thank you for downloading this episode of Folk on Foot. Before we start, I just wanted to share a brief message. If you like what we do, we really need your support to keep going. You can join our wonderful band of members and you'll get great rewards. These include access to our amazing Folk on Foot on Film archive of hundreds of songs shot on location on our travels around the UK and Ireland. To sign up, just go to folkonfoot.com/support us. You'll also get an ad-free version of all our episodes and an email postcard from me each time we go on a walk. If you just want the ad-free version, it'll cost you £3 a month, and you can get it through your Apple Podcast app or at folkonfoot.com/support us. Finally, if you don't want to make a regular commitment but do want to show how much you love us, you can simply buy us a coffee. You can also do that at folkonfoot.com/support us. Every penny we get goes back into making more episodes of Folk on Foot. So thank you and enjoy the walk.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's 8 o'clock on a February morning, and as we drove here from St Andrews, 20 minutes away, the light was coming up, and you can hear the end of the dawn chorus going on here, and we're in Tentsmuir Forest, which is this big expanse of forest right next to the sea on the coast of Fife. And we're here to meet two extraordinary musicians who've teamed up to make one of my favourite albums of this year. James Yorkston is a man of Fife. He lives here. And Nina Persson is the lead singer of the Cardigans, and she's from Sweden. But the two of them teamed up with the Second Hand Orchestra to create the album The Great White Sea Eagle, which has haunting personal songs. And we're hoping that James and Nina will share some of those songs with us as we walk through this glorious forest. James and Nina, good morning. Thank you very much for coming out so early, because you were playing a gig last night, weren't you?
Yeah, we were playing in the Bayer Theatre in St Andrews.
It was wonderful, I must say. We really enjoyed it. And we're going to talk more about that later, because it was one of your To Sup With a Fifer concerts. But where have you brought us, James? What is this place?
This is Tensmere Forest, which is just above the Eastnook of Fife, between the Eastnook and Dundee. And it's a large sandy forest with trees that come down very easily in the wind. And it's where I come and cycle with my children for many hours to lose myself from the screen, the computer screen, you know?
Yeah.
It's a good place to remind yourself how old you're getting and how much faster my son is on the bike than I am.
And Nina, I always associate Sweden with forests. Are forests kind of important in your life as well?
Well, sort of. I haven't grown up being that much of a nature person, but I recently got a place in the country. So we've started to discover the forests around the house a little bit. So recently it's become more so.
Yeah, because we're all in our anoraks here and you're in your fur coat, which I think, you know, is really glamorous
you
way
to
explore.
You don't think I look like an outdoorsy person?
You just look very glamorous in your fur coat this morning. And James, is nature an inspiration for you? Is experiencing nature an inspiration to you?
It seems to be. You know, it's a funny thing. I don't really think about what I write or anything. I certainly don't try and put trees in on things, but there's always questions about does where you live inspire what you write? And I used to say no. I used to think it was just, how could it? But how could it not, I think, is perhaps more accurate.
Because I get a picture of you sitting in your home, which is by the sea, I think.
Yeah, right by the sea, yeah.
And do you sit in your studio and look out at the sea? And
Not at this current studio. In this current studio, I sit and I look at a bird feeder, which is which is interesting, but it's not quite the sea, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I just try and write. I write when I'm on the road a lot. I write when I'm just alive, living, you know. It's about catching the moment, really, and a germ of an idea, and you get it down and you mark it down and then see what happens to it. And the thing I always say is it's important not to stop that writing, but it's also important to trust yourself to edit it, you know. So there's all sorts of nonsense in my notebooks, but some of them are gems and some of them are to be discarded and thrown in the fire, you know.
And you've brought your guitar with you.
Yeah.
Which is really nice of you, because a lot of the album was written on the piano, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was almost entirely run on the piano. Yeah, but I didn't really want to take the... I mean, it's good to see you and stuff, but I didn't really want to carry a piano with me.
We have moved a harp before now, but a real full-size harp.
Yeah.
But not a piano. But I wondered if you might agree to sing a song for us.
Of course, yeah.
Would you
do
that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
What would you like to sing first?
Oh, well, is there one which...
How
we
are your fingers? What
my fingers will be fine. It's the voices. Shall we show you? Shall we try the harmony? Is that too hard?
The harmony might be good.
We sang it last night. Last thing we sang last night on stage, so...
Oh, that would be fantastic. Well, let's just stop here in this little grove, shall we? Maybe we can just step off the path.
Yeah.
And we'd have the pine trees behind us. If you would sing it here, that would be marvellous.
Yeah, that's a nice looking seat as well.
You and I, we own the truth. Our whole life. Reality, we settle, we promise everything. Here on the outskirts, life suits me. I know, my love, I hope you know. I've kept that love, I've kept it. But harmony, it has escaped me, and the world became too fast. And if I were a gambling man, I would not trust it by half, for the world became too fast, and I'll do my best to understand. And the past, they became so loud. words of love and promises. Distance became every day, and best intentions they drift away. And oh my love, I hope you know I've kept that love, I've kept it close, but harmony it has escaped me. And the words came out too fast, and if I were a gambling man, I would not trust them by half. For the words came out too fast, and I'll do my best to understand. Could still have them all, you know, our quiet hours, our rest at ease, safety in each other's arms, each other's plans, each other's dreams. And oh my love, I I've kept that love, I've kept that hope, but harmony, it has escaped me. And the world became too fast, and if I were a gambling man, I would not trust it by half. For the world became too fast, and I'll do my best to understand.
That's the most beautiful thing that's happened to me at 8:30 in the morning for many, many years, can I say? That was absolutely beautiful. And to hear you sing it here in the open air with the birds in the background and under the tree is very special to me. I don't know if it feels different to you than doing it on stage last night. Does it
I'm half asleep. Are you half asleep?
No, I thought... Yeah, yes. And it was wonderful. It's also that to sing this song without amplifying. I mean, at least we're not hearing ourselves in monitors and stuff. It really is... Yeah, kind of better in a way.
It's a different feeling, isn't
the
it?
Best shows are the ones where you can just walk on stage and plug in and it just sounds completely natural. And you don't have to ask for more of this or more of that, and it just sounds perfect, and it's just like you're in a living room. And this is kind of like that. Mm.
Yeah, but with the added benefit of the nature.
Yeah.
James, you've got a really small guitar, which is very sensible of you since we're walking along through the forest, but is it a special instrument?
Yeah, it's quite special. I got it in Granada, in Spain, around 2006. I was recording a new album and I was looking for a different instrument, you know, just something to bring something different to the project. And I saw this in a guitar shop window and I went in and said, oh, that looks nice, can I have a go? And they said, yeah, sure. And I was playing it, and I just fell in love with it immediately, and I was playing it over and over and over, and my wife, she was totally into it as well, and I said, do you want to have a go? Because she plays classical guitar, so she played it, and I was just thinking, oh my God, this is amazing. So we were there for maybe 40 minutes, and I said to the guy, how much is it? And he said, oh, it's 2,000 euro. And I said, okay, yeah, I'd like to buy it, please. This is 15 years ago. He went away, and he came back, and he was ashen-faced. And he said, actually, I've got it wrong. It's 4,500 euro plus tax.
Oh, wow.
I said, oh, my God, oh, my God. But he said, since you've been playing it and you're obviously a player, the maker has said you're allowed it for 2,500 euro plus tax. And I didn't have that money at the time, you know, and we couldn't get out of the bank machines, and it was before cards could be used and all that. So I just had to go away and forget about it. And 3 or 4 months later, I just kept on thinking about this.
Is this haunting you?
Yeah, this guitar, you know. So I rang up in my very, very broken Spanish. I said, oh, hi, do you remember me? I was in playing that Jesus Bejido guitar. And they said, yeah, yeah. And I said, can I still have it for 2.5? They said, yeah, yeah, totally. So I did the bank transfer. And it arrived in the post and it weighs practically nothing. And I thought, the Bampot stuff sent me a...
An empty box.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But no, and it's here and it's arrived. No, absolutely.
And it sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous instrument. And
very gentle.
Yeah,
it is. Well, Nanira, I want to understand how you first began this singing relationship with James, because I think it was a mutual friend who put you together, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Can you tell us how that happened?
Yeah, it's a friend of ours. I've known him just because through music, various. He's a Swede. For about 20 years, and so has James. And this guy is somebody who really, like what he does, he plays music, he has a record label, he's a great matchmaker, obviously. He curates radio shows, and he just has a really good sensibility for coming up with new projects and matching people again.
And we should name him.
His name is Carl Jonas Winqvist, and he's also the person who pretty much put together the Secondhand Orchestra. And put James in.
Who are on the album?
Who are on the two albums? Yeah.
Yeah, of course they were on the Wide Wide River with you, James, weren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We've had a relationship, me and Carl Jonas, where he sent me different suggestions for. I think we've been trying to do something for a long time, actually. And then this one came up. He's like, now I have this guy James who's going to make a new record, and told me about the project. And I was sent a few songs, and Carl Jonas described the project to me, and I thought it sounded musically fantastic. And also as a project, it was nice that it was a request where I wasn't just asked just to top line something or just to come in and out or email files even of vocals. I was kind of after something with more meat on the bones, sort of. So, and it's the people I already knew about, I really like, so it was very attractive to me. And then we spoke a little bit, James and I, emailed and spoke and agreed on trying it, yeah.
Right, and so when you say trying it, so, you know, I've talked a lot to people recently who were emailing files about and putting albums together in lockdown particularly, and, you know, by remote control. How did this process work? Did you get together quite early on? You know, did you meet in person?
Well, we actually only met in person when James was already travelling to Sweden and we were on our way to record the album.
Right.
Yeah, we had Zoomed and stuff.
Yeah, James came to Malmö and we had an afternoon together where we sat down and played and sang. And obviously, I mean, I don't know what we would have done if it had sounded like shit, but we already knew that it was...
Yeah,
you know, very
there was a fear. There was a fear, you know.
And did you know Nina's work with the Cardigans and...
Yeah, I mean, my music is... The music I'm interested in tends to be the kind of more traditional music from all over. But, of course, I knew the big hits. But then back in the day, when I first moved to Edinburgh from the East Nook, I got in with a whole bunch of music guys and we were pre-internet. You know, you'd buy an album and if it was good, you'd pass it around your friends, you know. One of the early Cardigans albums, an album called Life, was one of those albums that we used to put on tapes and share around and all that sort of thing. So I knew that album very well indeed.
Right.
You know, and in fact, quite maybe a month or so ago, Nina sang a snippet of it in the car or something, like just one line. I said, oh my God. And it was like, oh, right, yeah. It's So obviously I knew who Nina was. And when KJ suggested working with her, I went on YouTube and had a listen to what she was up to nowadays in case
she'd
turned into
a really weird direction.
Yeah, like, I don't know, like I'm not really into histrionic vocals. I'm not saying you had to be careful, you know what
yes,
I mean?
Yeah.
But I absolutely loved what I was hearing on YouTube, so it was just like, oh, this could be great. You know, this could be really good. So I was very happy, you know. And it works. You know, I love it. I especially love doing it live now. It's blending the vocals together is such a
it works beautifully.
Yeah, yeah,
it absolutely works beautifully. We're walking through a great pile of mud here.
You're
going around the edge. I'm going right through the middle.
We have some illustration of what's going on.
It's an occupational hazard, you know. This is what happens to me. I'm right in the middle of a puddle.
Wow. I love this kind of It's kind of pines, beech pines.
What are you going to sing for us, James?
We're going to sing one called Choices Like Wide Rivers.
And this is from the first, second-hand orchestra album.
Yeah, but we've changed it. We've changed it around to suit us, as it were, you know.
Let's hear it.
Choices like wide rivers. Choices like wide rivers, semaphore your love. I am asleep in the front and I'm playing you the new songs. Love hurts, love hurts, love hurts, go the new song. Choices like wide rivers, semaphore your love. Choices like wide rivers, semaphore your love. Love, love, love. And when we came to the wide, wide river, I fell on my yellow belly and I swam. And when I reached the other side, I up to my chicken feet and I ran. Choices like wide rivers. Choices like wide rivers. Semaphore your love, 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 love.
And it all turns out we have something to swear on, something we would not have had. And it all turns out we have somewhere to pour our love, 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 love. Choices like wide rivers. Choices like wide rivers.
Semaphore your love,
love, love. I am asleep in the front and I'm playing you the new song. Love hurts, love hurts, love hurts, go the new songs. Choices like wide rivers.
Semaphore your love.
Choices like wide rivers.
Semaphore your love,
love, love, love. I wish the birds could sing more in tune.
I know, it was definitely them, wasn't it? It wasn't me.
Yeah. They were all singing with you. That was beautiful. Thank you very much indeed. Absolutely. I mean, just sitting on a log here under a tree, there's nothing better, is there? There's nothing better.
If there'd been something to keep our asses dry, it may have been slightly better.
You're a bit damp now, you've been sitting on that log.
I would sacrifice it for art.
So I'm keen to learn a little bit about both of your stories. And James, I wonder if you... Did you grow up round here? Are you a Fifer by birth?
Fifer by birth. Well, my family's from all over the place. Do you know those DNA things you get done?
Yeah.
We had those done recently, and I actually came out as mostly Scandinavian. Both my father's and my mother's families, if you go back a couple of generations, came down from Aberdeenshire, so... But there's also other things mixed in. My mother was born in Cairo. My father's mother was from southwest Wales. She was a Welsh speaker most of her life. So it's been a fair journey to here.
Yeah.
But I mean, we've been in the East Nick for ages. My grandmother was in St Andrews. I was brought up in King's Barnes, now I live in Celladyke. So I've been here for ages and ages. You know.
And tell us about the Kingdom of Fife and why that's a special place.
Look, I think everywhere's special. You know, when I was young, I used to... spent a lot of my childhood in West Cork, in the island. And I used to love the green and the beaches and the general lack of population, the peace and the quiet and the stars and things. And it was only one year after I'd been visiting most of my life that I realised it was almost identical to the East Nick of Fife. it was a long drive to get there, you know.
And what took you there?
In the mid-1960s, my father won half a house in a poker match. So we ended up going there to try and do it up. And so most of our summers were spent there. It didn't have running water or electricity or anything like that. And so we went there every year until pretty much I signed a record deal when I was 29. Then.
So were you exposed to a lot of Irish music at that time?
Oh, yeah, you know, it was Irish music that got me into traditional music, without a doubt.
What sort of things were you listening to?
Well, it was the music that you'd hear in the bars, really. That's the thing that first opened my ears to it. But then it was pipers like Willie Clancy and Seamus Ennis, and singers like Elizabeth Cronin, who's still a huge influence on me, and then bands like Planxty. When I was about 15 or 16, I started kind of rediscovering that music and listening back to it and trying to get this music of my childhood, you know. I knew people like Sheena Wellington, obviously, Scottish traditional singers. But I'd always veered clear of the English stuff because for some reason I thought it was very courtly and staid. But then I heard Anne Briggs. And this is like when I was 20 or something. And that just opened up English traditional music for me completely. And the stories and her singing. And I know she's very influenced by the Shannos singing of Ireland, so maybe that's why I got into it. And then that just opened everything. And from then on, now I listen to traditional music from all over. I love going back to the root. So people like Rakita Zafi from Madagascar, and Dagari, obviously, again, another Malagasy guitar player. And then on to people like Umu Sangare and Oxo Babab and Ali Fakatare, all these people, you know. So that was the music that really inspired me. But I mean,
so it's all kinds of traditional music, traditional music of your home.
Oh, yeah, types. Absolutely. I mean, I love Dick Gockin, obviously, you know, and I love people like that. John Strachan, and, you know, there's all sorts of yeah, music from anywhere, really, you know. Good music from anywhere.
And do you find that you go away from the tradition and then come back to it, that you head off in different directions, for example, with, you know, Yorkston Thorn Kahn and with the Second Hand Orchestra, but then you come back to the roots of the traditional.
Well, now
music.
I'm completely different. I mean, that was like when I was in my 20s, when I was kind of steering along those paths. Now it's just what interests me and what doesn't. And now I find things like genre very sort of, you know, you can shut yourself off from some great music, you know. So now I just listen to anything I like. Good music, that's what I love, good music.
And Nina, I'm interested in your life and musical journey as well.
I'm sort of more from like small town, middle class areas, kind of.
I gather a lot of churches in your town.
Yeah, I lived in one for a long chunk of my life. I lived in a town that has tons of churches. But I come from a family that we moved there. I'm not from the area. And I moved there with my parents, and my mom is like a full-blown atheist, so that I was not part of the church environment. But I grew up around a lot of born-again people.
We've come off the path a little bit, Nina, because it's very, very boggy and wet, but the trees are towering above us here, aren't they, which is incredibly atmospheric. So you were saying you were in this town with lots of churches, but
yes,
that wasn't part of your life.
No, not at all. But I think, in fact, the Cardigans formed out of boredom, in a way. And we were a minority, being like profane music makers
in
the
atheists.
Town. Yeah, so we really had something to rebel against. And that helped us, because we were so sweet in our sort of identity anyway. So it was nice to feel like we were rebelling against something.
Did they start and then invite you to join, or did you all come together at once?
Yeah,
I had
started to do music in the afternoons with a friend of mine. We sort of actually joined the Cardigans together. We were a twofer. It was a guitar player and me.
Right.
Sort of, yeah. I had always been interested in music and listening to music, but not at all interested in pursuing anything or singing in any kind of context. I was more into like figurative art. That's what my path was at the moment. I had no hunger to enter the the music world in any way, but my band took me into it, pretty much, and it took off pretty quickly. So suddenly I found myself being a musician.
Yeah, and if you'd gone a different way, would you have been an artist? I mean, would you have been a painter?
Who knows? It was also the age when people went off to art schools. I did 1 year of art school. So and a lot of anything could have happened after that, of course, but something like that was what I had in mind, architecture or art or something like that, yeah.
But it did take off in a huge way, and then there was that soundtrack for Romeo and Juliet with Love Fool on it, and that went stratospheric, didn't it? The Baz Luhrmann film. How did it feel when you saw that film and you saw the impact it was having on the band?
Well, I actually didn't see the film until like 10 years later,
really?
To be honest. And the impact of the... It's funny, I was telling somebody about this the other day. Our day-to-day life was exactly the same throughout it all. It was just that people started to tell us that things were happening, and maybe we got nicer plane tickets suddenly and, you know, more butter on our toast. That's sort of it. But the day-to-day work remained the same, and to this day, you only notice the difference really when you have a big break and you realize that you know, people talk to you differently.
And were there bigger audiences coming to see you?
Yeah, eventually, of course. And, of course that was a difference too, eventually, yeah.
Yeah, did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I quite did, but also on another level, not, because it was also, since it was not part of me to, I had no sort of career wish in this field, and I had no intention to be recognized or to get famous or to have, you know, or to, you know, top charts or anything. I would have given it away to anybody who wanted it more than me, if I could have, sometimes. But it is what it is, and it's like in retrospect, I'm really happy I have all that behind me. I'm really happy I have experienced it, and I'm happy that I'm still can work with music, and not have that sort of. We talked about it, James and I, also how that can really destroy you sometimes, as a musician and as a creator, that you feel like you start to believe that you've done your best. You have done the best is already behind you, sort of. And that was never something I was. Thinking, which I'm happy about.
I just want to ask you about one thing which I saw on YouTube, which must have been an amazing moment in your life, which was I saw you singing a Led Zeppelin song to Led Zeppelin.
Right.
At a prize-giving event, the Polar Prize. You sang Whole Lot of Love to Robert Plant and Jimmy Page.
Did you see them laughing in the audience also?
Yeah, but I think it was with pleasure. I think they were applauding your performance. But were you scared when you had to go out there and sing that to them?
I think I was quite scared, actually. And I remember it because that whole performance to me is like a big blackout. So I have also only experienced it watching it on YouTube.
So you just had a blank.
I was in another zone completely. There was also royalties in the audience.
The king was there as well.
I think the Led Zeppelin guys are sitting next to the Swedish royal family, really. So it was quite intense audience to sing to.
Yeah. So and you're going to sing to Robert Plant a song that he has vocally made famous. How did you prepare for that? Did you rehearse for?
No, I think I had to just dive into that zone where I have no memory left anymore. It was not also like there's nothing you can do but just sort of, you know, headbutt it, the task, because it's there's nothing to there can be no pretensions because he's obviously done a fantastic performance. But it was really fun, and I'm actually proud of it afterwards. Also, the band that is playing, the musicians are my friends, so I felt really comfortable in their company too.
Did you see him afterwards, and did he give you, Robert, give you any comments?
Or? Yeah, he did, and Rob, what's his name?
Jimmy Page
sure did.
What did he say?
Well, he was just, that's a different story, but they were, I think they were... appreciative.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's walk on because James is getting ahead of us. So
yeah. He knows these woods.
Let's get through the puddle. Now, can we get around this bit as well?
It does dry out for a short while.
Does it?
Yeah, or we could walk over through that way and then get onto another path which might be drier.
Let's try just beyond this next section, so if we... Would you just tell us about the song first before you play it?
Yeah, it's a new one. It kind of came out of nowhere. I don't even really remember writing it. It was in my notepad when I was playing in a hotel room, and it just fell into a tune, and that was it. But I, when I'm writing, I try and write and write and write and just let all the words come out, and I don't edit whilst I'm writing. And then when I come back to them, because I haven't focused on them so much, I can look at them at a kind of face value and either take them seriously or scratch them off, you know. And this one just seemed to work in a wanna. I can't even remember if I had to do much editing. So,
what's it called?
I don't even really have a title.
You've been calling it With Me, With You, just as a working title, yeah.
But it's, we haven't recorded it. We've done it live quite a lot.
Yeah.
It's been fun to do live, mostly.
Yeah. No, it's worked well.
Shall we try?
Yeah. La, 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 la.
With me, oh, you can just be you, and I hope you know me well enough by now to I ain't searching for some superstar. I want you just the way you are. With you, oh, I can just be me. And we know the value. You're not searching for some superstar. I tell you, I am right here. I tell you, I am right here. I know this city. I have lived these streets. I'm just half a mile away. That I play the dust, the best coffee, and I will not sell you short, take you anywhere else. La, da, la, da, 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 da. Troubles that we see. So if you're not searching for some superstar, if you're looking for someone to share, I tell you I am right here.
I suppose the whole theme that comes out of talking to you is about collaboration, actually, and about how creative collaboration works. And I know, James, that you also do something called To Sup Wi' a Fifer,
which
is putting together different artists and putting them on stage, curating them,
I suppose. Yeah.
How do you choose the people that you collaborate with on that project?
Everything I do, I try and be as natural as what I want to do. And therefore, if it works and I can do it again, then it just means I'm just being me. So I don't have to pretend to be someone else. So with To Sup Wi' a Fifer, it just began by getting people that I wanted to see play up in Fife, because there wasn't much music there, you know. Yeah. So we started off at the Adam Smith Theatre in Kirkcaldy, which is, it's more well-known for having things like blues band tributes and Lady Boys of Bangkok and things like that. You know, very popular things which sell a lot of tickets, but perhaps not the sort of thing I would want to go and see myself. So I just began asking artists that I thought, well, I'd love to see Linton Kwesi Johnson. And then there'd be people like who I'd meet on the road, or perhaps they would open for me, or I'd see them at a festival, people like Richard Dawson, and I'd ask them to come and play. And then when it started getting a little bit more money behind it, thanks to Creative Scotland, I managed to bring people like Michael Hurley over from America, who's like one of my all-time great songwriter guys that, you know, I really admire. And also people like Dick Gochen and Sheena Wellington. It's a lot of traditional music, and it was the mixing in the pop stuff, which I put myself in that category, so I don't, it's not an insult, alongside more experimental music, people like Carl Stone, and some real weird things, but some really beautiful
things. And some verbal, so there's poetry and storytelling as well as music.
Yeah, we had Marilyn Robertson on last night, who's a storyteller from...
And she's told an extraordinary story about Shetland.
Yeah, I mean, she's been amazing. And we've had people like Selena Godden, and had all sorts of people. Jeff Hattersley was one of my favourites, a poet from Yorkshire, who I'm a big fan of. So we've had all sorts of interesting people up, yeah.
And Nina, obviously you were performing on one of these events last night. What was it like to be part of that collaboration with the different kinds of artists who've been taking part?
Oh, it's amazing. Especially when we're slightly different field also, to have a storyteller along too was amazing. It's great. I've been doing some things like that too, and I think it's really like, that's when you can really harvest as a touring musician as well, because you sort of just, you do your thing, but you also sort of just float around and experience and get to listen to other people and to hang out, and it is a bit like just a party with your friends, that thing. And the audience can sense it too, I think, that crossover and the camaraderie and everything. So it's a nice present that we can do once in a while as well.
And you said earlier on that you've been teaching, and I think you teach creativity.
Mm-hmm.
You don't teach music, but you teach how to be creative, is that right?
Yes, sort of, yeah. Creative development work, yeah.
Yeah, so tell us what I would learn if I came on your course.
Yeah, well, you would be alongside of like very young people. It's about what it really is like a class, a forum where there's a lot of like their feedback happens there, and it's their peer-to-peer learning and a lot of like creative methods, and it's also a place where you work with them, helping them figure out their context as an artist. Because when you're at a music university, often you study hard, you learn a lot, and you tend to be very impressionable, and you tend to be very, like, sometimes you actually forget your roots and forget, like, what your the core of your creativity is or was, or you become self-conscious, more critical of yourself. So it's a place where you sort of hone that and keep that and harvest that in a way.
So the key to creativity is losing your self-consciousness in a way, is not
often,
being self-critical.
Often, yeah, to not restrain yourself and to let yourself be, you know, to let the flow be there, not to stop the flow, really. So it's all about that. And also, it's a place where we learn to talk about music, feedback technique, in order to, because there's also, it's important also to be objective sometimes about music and not, you know, not to be, because people can be very, very sensitive.
And James, how does collaboration work for you? Is it a spur to creativity to have a refreshing collaborator come along? I mean, looking at your sort of history, it seems like, you know, you seek out a new collaborator from time to time in order perhaps to give you a new impetus.
Yeah, I mean, most of my work is solo. I know it looks as though I have a lot of collaborators, but really there's only really been Yoxin Thong Khan and now Nina and the Second Hand Orchestra. I mean, obviously work with different musicians to freshen up albums and things, but I feel as though a lot of my life is spent on the road solo with a guitar, you know, playing songs, and I love that. Music is such a beautiful and giving thing that when you find people that you want to share it with, I mean, it's, as one gets older, you know, I'm 50-something now, the musicians who are around my sort of age, they tend to be the good people. I don't mean good musically, but I mean the good-hearted people. You know, the people who have stuck with music despite the fact perhaps they haven't had major careers. I know, obviously, Nina has had a very, very successful career, but most of the musicians I play with tend just to be people who are obsessed with music. And that you've got an instant communication with them. You've instantly got this bond that you know why you're doing something as daft as music for a living. You know, when I'm singing with Nina on stage and the harmonies are going and we're close together, it's such a warm lovely feeling that it's worth searching out for. It's worth the six-hour trip to Birmingham, you know.
Well, and it communicates itself to the audience. When you as artists are connecting in that way, we as the audience are feeling it, you know, and that's also a beautiful feeling to have.
I think that's true. And, you know, it's good travelling around and meeting new people and playing new venues and doing all that sort of stuff, but I don't think I would do it if it wasn't for the gig. If, you know, I don't think I could just be a tour manager. I'm not saying there's anything against tour managers, but I think the gig is the payoff, yes. You know. And so sometimes, if you have a bad gig, which we haven't on this tour at all, they've all been really good, but it can be like a bit of a blow because it's the whole day has been into this 90-minute slot, and if it goes badly. But this has been great. We've had wonderful people on the road, the whole from start to finish, you know.
And are you happy in your own company? Because obviously the writing process is inevitably solitary, and you've also written novels, which is a really solitary process that goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
Do you find that more of a struggle than writing songs, or do you find that as a great refreshing?
I don't struggle
change?
With any of it.
Right.
It's because I'm lucky. I feel as though I'm very lucky that I've never had any kind of hit. Like, when I was in my 20s, I never had a novelty hit or anything like that, you know. There's no one who's really expecting anything from me other than JY, people who are interested in the stuff I do, and they're just expecting me to get on with it. That's what I find. So I don't really find any pressure or anything like that. I mean, what's the worst thing that could happen? Write a song and it's not very good. I mean, it's not the end of the world, you know.
But the novel... The worst thing that could happen is you've invested in thousands of words and then you read it back and you think,
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That could be a lot of wasted time.
Well, I suppose I've never really... I don't know. I came to long-form writing kind of through the back door. Somebody offered me a lot of money to write a magazine article. So I wrote it, and then they said, do you want to turn it into a book? So I wrote it. Mm. So then I thought, well, I can write that many words.
That was the tour diaries,
yeah. And then the first novel was just... I don't find it hard at all, really. It's harder to do nothing, to sit, you know, twiddling my thumbs or whatever. That's the tricky thing. And also, with a novel, you write the novel, you look at it and you edit, and then somebody else edits and it gets copy edited and stuff. You know, it's not just me creating that thing. You write the main part of it, but it goes through loads of lenses before it gets to the reviewer, who gives it 3 out of 5.
Five out of five.
Yeah.
The
one.
Book of the Gaels, though, is that exploring the Celtic connections? Is that, you know, that we talked about your Irish experiences?
Yeah, yeah. That was definitely. I wanted to write about my memories of our lives in Ireland in the mid-70s and into the 80s, and I wanted to write about that because I'd just written the Three Crows novel was written in Fife, and then the next one, which never actually got published but was bought to be made into a film, bizarrely, that was also written in Scotland, about Scotland. So I wanted to get out of Scotland. And Ireland is a place I know very well and I'm very fond of. So it's just exploring, and it's just a fun thing to go back to. It's a fun world. Oh, I remember that, and put that in. Oh, yeah, this bit. Oh, and that bit. You know, it's just to make it easier. Mm-hmm. Path of Least Resistance or something like that. So and Book of the Gaels again. You know, it's a... I value these things. I value the books as highly as I value the albums, as kind of career stamps, you know, more than a remix.
But it's an artifact that you can put on the shelf and say, this is where I got to at that stage.
This is something I did.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's doing creative stuff. It's mostly fun, you know. Yeah. And if you can get to the place where you're just doing it as... If I can get to the place, which I think I am, where I'm doing it as me and not trying to be like, oh, Ian Rankin, he does really well, you know. Ian's a pal, you know, and he's an amazing writer. But imagine if I wrote an Ian Rankin-style novel and it went well, then the rest of my life would be like, oh, no, I've got to pretend to be Ian Rankin again. The whole idea is not pretending to be someone else, just being yourself and creating your art. And if you're lucky enough, then you can make some kind of living out of it. That's the cunning plan.
And Nina, have you got to that stage too where you do things that are really you and that you care about and you're able to choose on that basis?
Yes, that's the biggest luxury you can have, is to be able to do what you think is right and real, yeah.
And where does this collaboration go next? I think you've got some more gigs to do in the summer. You're doing some festivals.
Yeah, we have. We have all the way through the summer, even starting to discussing the fall for gigs. So that's what we know at this point.
And you can't see beyond that, presumably, to whether there might be another.
We're talking about things back and forth a little bit, different things that could happen.
Well, you built some amazing foundations, so it would be a shame for the house not to continue to grow.
Exactly, yeah. Absolutely.
We'll see. We'll see. I mean, fingers crossed, but yeah.
Now we've been in the forest with muddy paths also together, so it's...
It's a bonding experience, isn't
yes.
it? Would you sing us one last song?
Yeah, sure.
Would you sing?
This is a song called A Hollow Skeleton Lifts a Heavy Wing, and it's about that... Well, maybe I won't tell you it's about. That's probably easier for me if I don't.
Okay. We'll listen to the words.
Okay. Forgive me, boys. Forgive me, boys. Forgive me, boys. For these blues won't leave me alone. And I was walk brings a moment's peace. Oh, show me the mechanics of this, if you please. A hollow skeleton lifts a heavy weight. Hollow skeleton lifts a heavy wing. A hollow skeleton lifts a heavy wing.
The tree creeper, he owns this place. He runs the woods as I watch and wonder. Busted cannot reclaim to this colored heaven. I dreamt I woke unburdened and I walked and I ran. I dreamt I woke unburdened and I did not look back. I dreamt I woke unburdened and I walked and I ran. A hollow skeleton lifts a heavy weight. Showed herself yesterday. You don't need me to tell you how we waltzed. She asked, what are these cards you're dealing me? I replied,
you should have seen some of the others.
You call for peace. We've reached halfway for better. Halfway for better or worse. We've reached halfway for better or worse. If the first half was rough, oh, the second is a curse. A hollow skeleton lifts a heavy weight.
can't compete with his own beliefs. A hollow skeleton lifts a heavy wind. A hollow skeleton lifts a heavy wind.
Great. I was just trying to see a tree creeper or a buzzard while I was here, but I didn't go spotted any yet. But it was wonderful to hear those words in the forest.
Yeah.
Would you go to the beach, James, ever, while you're here?
Not here, but other beaches I do.
Right.
But yeah.
It's not far.
Beaches at home I prefer. So.
And you're a champion skimmer of stones, I gather.
Who fed you that misinformation? I enjoy skimming stones, but a champion, I would say, was a... I think that would be a lie.
Listen, it's been wonderful to spend some time with you here in the forest and to hear your beautiful songs and your stories. Thank you so much, Nina, and thank you, James.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
We rely entirely on support from our listeners to keep Folk on Foot going. So if you've enjoyed this episode, why not buy us a coffee? Just go to folkonfoot.com/support us. While you're there, you can also sign up as a patron. You'll get great rewards, including exclusive access to films of loads of the songs we've heard on our travels around the UK and Ireland, and the chance to be in the audience of just 10 people at a front room gig live on Zoom. Plus, there's the satisfaction of knowing that every penny you give will go back into making more episodes of Folk on Foot. So just go to folkonfoot.com/support us. The link is in the show notes. Also, please make sure that more people can find us by spreading the word on social media, subscribing or following us on your podcast app, and rating and reviewing us wherever you can. Thank you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.